Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to The Psychology of Work. Today I'm joined by John Cooper, the co-founder and CEO of Overalls, a company redefining how employers support their teams by addressing life's non-work challenges, from caregiving to financial stress and beyond. And John will really share more about their work in a minute. But John really brings a deep understanding of the startup journey, having built and scaled multiple ventures, and he has a sharp lens on what it takes to grow a team without losing its soul. And in this episode, we'll really explore how talent needs shift at every stage of a company. From the early days of scrappy versatility to the specialized demands of scale, John will really talk about how to navigate the evolution without breaking the culture. We also dive into the human side of work, really focusing on how personal life stressors impact productivity, trust, and team connection, and what leaders can do to better support their people beyond the job description. So I'm just so excited to chat with you, John. You know, it was really nice meeting you at Transform and just learning about Overalls, and then also just seeing you there, like you and your people, like everywhere. And I was so intrigued about your company. Can you, you know, add anything that I haven't shared about you that you want to add? And then tell us about Overalls on top of it.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. It was great meeting you too, and I'm excited to be here. So overall, I thought you did a great job summarizing what we do. The easiest way to think about it is we are doers for life's to-dos. We try to address issues around stress and burnout, but really tackle the root cause. So it's not how you manage the stress, it's how you avoid the stress in the first place by having a set of hands to help you deal with the things that give you the most stress. So super simple value prop, and knock on wood, we find that people love it. We've seen a lot of growth.
I love it. I mean, I totally get that. Root cause is like what psychologists are all about, right? And I think in our world, we try to put these patches on things. But I know this particularly like as a, you know, a mom, a working mom, and someone in startup. Like there's only so much time you have. So you really have to be thoughtful about like what needs to get done and how are you going to solve those problems, which often is like not me doing the things, you know, even if I want to be doing them.
Yeah, 100%. And so many people in our workforce are in similar situations. They're not necessarily running a startup, but maybe they're a caregiver. Maybe they're working multiple jobs. Maybe they're a single parent. Maybe they're managing a chronic condition. When you start to add up all of those babies, it's roughly 85% of the workforce that is dealing with a major life stressor at any given time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just like now curious about Overalls in general, but like what are the biggest things people are solving for?
Great question. So the way we think about it is really sort of there's like three buckets. One are the daily distractors, and I'll come back to each of these. The second are just what we call the disruptors, and then the third are the disasters. Each one has a different level of stress associated with it and a different frequency associated with it. The daily distractors, they're like the little gnats that nag you all the time. It's the, you know, weird charge that showed up on your Verizon bill, and you're like, what is this? Now I've got to call them, and I'm going to sit on hold, and I'm going to bounce around to five different call centers. Those are the daily distractors. The disruptors are the things that are a little bit bigger, but they don't happen as often. Like I'm moving to a new home and now I've got to cancel all my subscriptions, find movers, pack up the house, get utilities done, do an inspection, like all the work that comes with that bigger event. And then the disasters, you know, these once in 100-year black swan events are now once a year for most of the world, most of the United States. Floods, fires, other natural disasters. And then there's also our personal disasters where, you know, it might be the tragic loss of someone that we love or a serious diagnosis or something that just happens and just affects us. But it's really all these things combined. And we find that our usage really mirrors these things. So on a daily basis, we're helping people with the daily distractors. But then the things that are really profound and impactful is how a company shows up for their employees when they're faced with a real disaster. They have, you know, a serious diagnosis or the loss of a loved one or their house is, you know, impacted by a fire. Those happen less frequently, but they tend to be much more emotionally charged and more sort of time consuming than the daily distractors.
I love it. Yeah, I definitely need to sign up for this and think like half my town would probably sign up for this, which is awesome. But I just know you and you're making me think too, the fact that you can sort of flex with people's needs because the human experience is naturally varied. And it's making me think like for us at groups, we kind of, it's sort of similar. Like it's like, we're kind of in the backdrop or with teams when there's moments of, you know, friction or dysfunction or they need help, but we're not really totally going away. We can kind of go back and forth. But I think I hadn't really thought about it through that lens. Like as we're chatting, we're both sort of supporting companies in different ways, yeah, being able to flex around needs because human needs change.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's two, like the two are very complementary, right? It's two solutions to address the same problems around stress, burnout, and just managing. You can't really show up for work if you can't take care of your life issues as well.
Totally. Well, I know you've done, this is not your first go around in sort of the venture world, and you've led through teams through different stages of growth. What's really been the hardest part of balancing like that early scrappiness with the need of specialization as a company matures? And also like, where are you at Overalls in your own stage and development?
Yeah. So with Overalls, we, you know, it's been fun. I've been part of startups for the last 15 years. I founded a business with my best friend 10 years ago or 12 years ago. We grew it to be a really good size and ended up selling it to a large insurance company. And then we were part of that 5,000 person organization for a period of time too. And then with Overalls, we're on a similar trajectory. Now we've got, you know, when we include all of our doers, we've got close to 100 people. And it's been really interesting, like thinking through, like, how do you maintain a culture and an evolution as a company is scaling really, really quickly? And I know that's a problem people always talk about. But the reason is because it's a real problem where, like, early on, what do you need in a company? You need people who are super versatile, who will roll up their sleeves and, you know, get sort of the business going, and they can wear a lot of hats. Then as a company matures, you almost, you know, you don't need the opposite, but in many ways you need people who are deeply specialized and their span of responsibility and focus is much more narrow. And the tricky thing is, like, those early people, they are the DNA of the business. And it's not easy to transition from being a generalist who's involved with everything to a very narrowly focused specialist. But it's really critical to do that for the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see that. We work with a lot of scaling companies in these like hyper growth stages where they're vulnerable to low cohesion or disconnection because they're just growing so quickly. On the other part of it too, we see is that like shared goals are really, really important in terms of team cohesiveness. And so as a company grows, they have that early, their mission and vision are like there, but it's often like evolving a little bit and maybe not like 100% articulated. And so like generally from a business perspective, like fine, sort of whatever, but from an actual like cohesion team perspective, it's like really mission critical. So one of the first things we do is go in and be like, let's really refine the mission, vision, values so you can start to hire the right people, reduce your churn, and also start to build the narrative around whatever this like company really is as it becomes formalized. But how do you like, how can founders and leaders retain the cultural contribution or kind of like who they are as like in their soul or the sort of tribal knowledge of the early employees while still like evolving the team structure to meet the new demands? Like, how do you even think about that as you've done this?
Yeah, it's a really difficult problem to solve. I mean, a few tactics, I wouldn't say this is like a comprehensive strategy, but a few tactics that I think really are good for the business, but also good to build that cohesion that you're describing is, you know, every year we'll do an annual retreat. And one of the exercises we'll do at this annual retreat where the whole company is invited is a vision, mission, values exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And early on when the company's really small, literally we're all just sitting in the same room doing it. But as the company grows, you start to break it apart and you're asking, you know, almost like working groups or breakout sessions to go and like craft, you understand what we want to do, craft your own vision, mission, values. And then we take it together and we turn it into one cohesive statement, vision statement, mission statement. But it gives everyone a sense of ownership around it. And it gets everyone thinking very big picture as opposed to myopically around their day-to-day job. And it's a nice way to reinforce that we're all united by the same set of vision, mission, and values. So that's been one thing, that a tactic that we've done that I think has been very effective and people seem to really enjoy. The second, it's also difficult. Like early on, literally all your founding team and everyone's involved in almost every decision. And then as the company grows, it creates two challenges. One where people want to be involved in everything, and all of a sudden now decisions are happening outside of their purview. And it's, you know, a little frustrating for some of those early leaders in the business because they're used to have that span. But what we find to be very, very valuable is to try to empower the leadership team to have a lot of autonomy, a lot of decision-making authority, and really run their own sort of area of the business and department with a lot of autonomy. And I think that goes, you know, a long way in terms of helping people feel ownership and connection to the business, that autonomy and like driving their own area.
Yeah, everything I do is through the lens of team psychology and organizational psychology. And the things you're really highlighting are one, with the sort of co-creation of the mission, vision, values, when you can like almost neutralize the power in that way, you know, and invite people to co-create something, you're way upping the commitment to the organization because then people feel invested in a different way. Like they're part of building this thing that tags into a much bigger purpose. And I think like that's such a great example of a leader, like, you know, you both have to hold authority and flatten it at times, depending on the, you know, the, like whatever you're doing. This is a perfect example of how you can kind of invite people to really build a company alongside you.
Yeah. And actually you bring up a good point. I often think of the role of leadership versus management.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sort of setting, where do we want to go? And we've had to make, you know, the market's shifted a lot. There's been a lot of macro stuff. You have to make a lot of tough decisions as a business. You know, the where we're heading, the destination is, you know, something that I think a lot of times leaders need to take on. But the how you get there is really an opportunity to get the team engaged and really try to follow whatever the best path is, not who came up with it, not whose idea it was, but whatever the actual best path to that destination. And that could come from the most senior person in the organization or the most junior person in the organization. And once you start to do that, I feel that, like, at least on the teams I've been part of, the whole team starts to model it, where it really becomes a hierarchy of decisions and or a hierarchy of sort of a meritocracy based on just good ideas.
They're kind of empowering people to really like feel like they have some ownership over here. And I'm thinking like, you know, one class I teach is motivation. It's what drives human behavior in the workplace, really with a lens on intrinsic motivation. And I always come back to one book the students read. And by students, I mean, these are people like working in the field full time and then upskilling in work psych or management. But it's Daniel Pink's work really around, you know, autonomy, mastery, and purpose, and thinking very specifically around those lenses of like, how can you create opportunity for those three things within your organization?
Yeah. I think it's like, it's Drive. Is that the name of the book?
Yeah. Drive.
Yeah,
Drive
is the book. Where Daniel Kahneman, the behavioral economist, had this really funny sort of parable in one of his books where he talks about this kid who's playing football in front of his house. And he's like, really wants the kids to go away because it's disruptive. It's noisy.
Yeah.
So what he ends up doing is he goes out to the kids. He says, look, every time you guys play football in front of the house, I'll pay you $2 each. So the kids are like, this is great. And they're out there all the time. And then about 2 weeks later, he's like, actually, it's going to be $1 now. And the kids are like, oh, whatever. And then he's like, actually, I can't afford to pay you anymore. And the kid's like, why are we even playing football in front of this guy's house any longer? And it was such an interesting psychology of, you know, sort of loss aversion versus gain one.
Yeah.
But it really gets at like intrinsic motivation versus that extra.
Totally. That's why you should like, you know, and I know you have kids, I do too, like you should never like try to pay your kids for behaviors you want them to do, like take out the trash or something. Because once you've done it, they like will never want to go back. They don't like build that intrinsic kind of motivation.
Yeah, I wish someone had told me that about 5 years ago.
I know. I'm like a psychologist. I know these things and I still do things like this. But this is not really what we're, kind of planned to talk about, but it just also makes me think of, and like a lot of classes I teach, it's really, it just like highlights when we think about that sort of, thing in psychology, how like backwards companies are set up. Like we use a very much carrot and stick model, reinforcing these behaviors, thinking we're going to get the outcomes that we want. And then as leaders and managers, we're like, wait, why are we getting there? It's because we're not actually mapping organizational structures with the psychology of people and teams and how they like to operate. And, and I think like COVID tested that. It allowed us in a lot of ways, despite it being really hard, to be like, all right, what are my business needs and what do my people need? And I have some flexibility to, adjust here because I kind of have to. But because systems are slow to change and patterns repeat, like it's really hard to do that. But we're not really mapped, in the best way. I think
the return to office sort of wave is a great example of that. And that kind of follows the, I'm just connecting this now, but like that same Daniel Kahneman story, where like everyone went to work every day and they were fine with it. And then they didn't have to. And all of a sudden now they do again. And it's like almost like a punishment. But it's sort of nonsensical. There's so many companies where people, I hear them say, like, I had to return to office. I literally sit on Zoom all day long with someone at home or someone who's in another office. And it really is silly that, and I can't understand why companies do it this way, other than maybe it's easy and it's old habit versus and then people feel like they're being treated like children. And as a result, you're treated like a child. You kind of want to act like a child.
Totally. Yeah, and if we get back to Daniel Pink's like autonomy, mastery, purpose, like there's not autonomy in that, right? It's just like you're kind of it's like an easy way to give people choice. Like the way you can build an autonomy is through team task and time, right? And it's kind of like really asking anytime you're making an ask or a pay, it's like for what purpose? And then like communicating that down. So if there's a real purpose because we have to get a project done or even for social needs or something, and we know human contact's important, but there are different ways to structure it versus like you just have to come back in. And what I'm seeing, at least watching this, is that like that loop's not being closed for people. People are just being sort of mandated back without understanding the why and for what purpose. And oftentimes not even to serve any real need just because companies feel like it's the right
thing. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like having everyone in a room together, there's like some magic to that. It's wonderful. But that's not always being achieved by making everyone return to the office when their teams are scattered across the country and they're sitting in an office where literally no one else they work with is in that same room.
Totally. I know. We could have a whole conversation on this. And then they're grumpy sitting there. So then you're like not getting the best.
Yeah.
But let's get back to like sort of overalls and this idea that, is really built on the idea that life outside of work deeply affects how people show up at work. I mean, this is like, it's just, I love this premise. And that's why with all of our teams, we help teams like really appreciate that like people, there's not this hard line between like home and work. Like whatever's happening in the backdrop is coming to work with the person in some capacity. Yeah. Like what's, one example you've seen where supporting an employee's personal challenge led to stronger team connection or better performance? Or like, can you just share more about this idea and kind of like what's the why or the impact
here? Yeah, I mean, in general, there's specific examples that I'll talk through, but then there's a general message that's being communicated to a company when you offer something like an overalls. And I think that message is that we are trying to support you. We recognize you are human beings and that outside of work, you have a life. In the same way that like you have a really stressful day at work and you go home and you're burnt out and you're grouchy with your kids and all that stuff. Well, of course, the opposite's going to be true. If you have a really stressful life at home, how are you supposed to show up at work? And it's like that show Severance, and like just somehow immediately cut off your brain and perform well at work.
Yeah.
So at the big picture, there's a message that's being told to you, like, we are here for you. But in addition to that, one of the things, we have a board member, Lorianne Goldman. She is currently the CEO of Tupperware. She was the CEO of Avon, CEO of Spanx. And one of the things she said that will always stick with me, she goes, people don't necessarily remember the day-to-day at a company, but they do remember how their company treated them in the moments that mattered most. And then that's what creates, your evangelists, or on the other side, that's also what creates your you know, people who's like suck all the energy out of a business and out of a team. Mm-hmm. And being able to support people in those moments that really, really matter go a long way. And what we found is that, you know, companies offer a lot of benefits today to support employees. There's healthcare, there's dental, there's vision, there's caregiving solutions, medical navigation solutions, financial wellness solutions. But what we found is that these solutions are all, you know, designed for a specific problem. But a lot of times life is more messy than that. And a lot of the people who are in those situations are dealing with multiple issues at once. So I'll illustrate this with an example. We had an employee or one of our users who was a young attorney at a major law firm. And she was the first to go to college in her family, first to go to law school in her family. And the request she sends us, she says, I'm the caregiver for my parents. They're both disabled. They have two sources of income today, Social Security and income from a reverse mortgage. And the problem she had was that that reverse mortgage that her parents relied on only had about 3 months left in it. And at the end of that 3 months, they'd lose the income. But much bigger deal is they'd lose their home, the home that they'd been in for decades and decades. So she was now dealing with a situation like, what am I going to do with my parents? They can't really take care of themselves given their situation. They're about to essentially be homeless and we need to figure out where to put them and somewhere that, you know, can take care of them. I point to that example because, like, one, you can imagine how that would really weigh on you and lose sleep over trying to figure out what to do. Two is like, what benefit would help you with that in a traditional benefits environment? It really isn't one. Like, there's caregiving benefits, they'll help you find doctors, they'll help you find in-home care, refill prescriptions, but they're not going to help you with a reverse mortgage. There's financial wellness benefits. They'll help you, you know, open an IRA and find an investment advisor. But again, they're not going to help you with a reverse mortgage. And that's just one of countless examples of how life is way more complex and way more messy than a traditional sort of benefit structure is designed to support.
Yeah. I mean, I just see that being, I so see that, right? Just like in general, you know, I'm a Gen Xer. My mom passed away last year and, you know, like there's a period where, you know, in her last few months, now, you know, the life of just starting a company, I was like traveling a bunch, I was all over the place, but also wanting to pull my weight. So then, you know, when we would take turns going over to kind of help her and I was sort of finding people online to sort of fill in for me to help with, to work alongside my siblings or whatever. And it was just a lot to not only like, just to find someone or figure out like how to navigate this would have been so much easier, or even like, you know, transportation, yeah. Like yeah. Just like different things of like, I just need someone who can flex with me.
That's
here.
Such a tough situation. And so many people are in a similar situation and you add some of the, you know, long-term, like, you know, dementia and some of these really long-term illnesses where they're in that status for years after years. And one of the interesting data points we found that surprised me is we did an analysis of all the requests we've ever received and separated by what is the principle.
The problem that they're solving.
And what we found is like caregivers, for example, you would have thought that the number one request would have been around caregiving. And what we found is that was actually not number one, but it was number two, number three, number four. But a lot of times we found that these people, like they're spending a lot of time with the person they're caring for, and they don't necessarily need extra help there, but they want help for the rest of their life. So they're looking for, hey, can you find me a pet walker? Because I'm going to be.
Totally. Who's going to drive my kid to sports? Like,
And that was sort of an interesting aha moment because, you know, it gets back to this idea of like treating the root causes and where people want to spend their time. But for some of these people, the problem might not be what we think it is. It might be everything else. And they're just trying to free up time to handle the main thing they're focused on.
Yeah, I'm just like, my mind's going in different directions. Because on one hand, I'm like, I could see if you have people that are versatile like that and just step in. Do companies ever try to like hire these people? Like, I'm just wondering, like, I mean, what are they? So they're like, who are the people that are working?
So the way the model works is, you know, there's about 100 today, but it's growing very quickly across the U.S., all U.S. based. And we organize people into two teams. One team, there are generalists. Think of them almost as like a personal assistant. They're broad. They'll handle a lot of the daily distractors that are commonplace. In addition to that, there's a team that we call our life experts. And these are people, as the name would suggest, that have deep expertise in certain domains. many of them are actually stay-at-home parents who left the traditional workforce. Mm-hmm. But they're people with backgrounds as attorneys, paralegals, nurse practitioners, RNs, physician's assistants, accountants, general contractors, and so on. So if something more complex comes up, like that reverse mortgage, it's actually being assigned to one or sometimes multiple experts who have some domain expertise in that area, and importantly, also have the capacity to go out and understand and study a reverse mortgage and become experts on how to deal with that situation.
Interesting. And is this where your tech comes in? Is like a matching, or is this still like sort of manual at this
point? No, so there's a lot of tech behind the scenes. It comes in two places. So one is what you said, which is the matching. But secondly, there's a whole suite of AI agents that we've designed to make the job and the life of our concierges and experts simpler. There's a lot of the same things that we do over and over and over again when we're researching and so on. So we can automate some of those so that they're able to just do it more scalably and consistently.
I love that. And I also love that you've resisted the, I don't know if this was an urge, but you resisted to be like very domain specific, that you're kind of a generalist in the problems that you solve. And again, this comes back to the idea that like humans have a whole bunch of needs. And like, I just know from a startup perspective, sometimes it's just easier to be like, we're going to be this one thing for this one person. We're going to do it over and over again. And I think we really lose a lot when we do that because we're not solving like the real problem, which is often varied and bigger and more messy and complex, as the, you know, to use your words. And like that, this is basically like, you know, for groups work too. It's like what we say is we're helping teams improve cohesion and connection. And we're really get pushed back. Okay, well, we can look at retention and engagement as outcomes that are significantly improved, but that's not the only outcomes. So like, you're all like, I kind of empathize, appreciate that it's sometimes easier, but like this is the one thing we're going to solve for because it allows you to sort of scale faster. But on the other hand, it's not really, what you do is not limited to just one thing, which is kind of like the right approach, I think, and kind of what we're like, you know, the stance we're taking.
No, too. I think you're 100% right. And what's so interesting about it is, you know, we've done this before where we've tried to map out like the personas within an organization that we're helping and then the things we're helping them with. And as you said, it's not narrow, but in many ways, by being broad, it solved two problems. One is that because life is messy, what you need is sometimes you need a pet sitter when you're a caregiver. That's the way, you know, what life demands of people. But the second is a lot of times the problem you're solving, it's the same problem for different personas. So if I need to find care, you know, finding care for my young child, my mom, myself is the same process. So you are able to really build that, you know, that muscle and muscle memory around how you do these things into the organization, even though you're doing it for different personas.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I imagine instead of just being like one persona with one thing, it's one persona who has the same cluster of things. You know what I mean? Like middle-aged women who are taking care of parents and kids and working, right? Or whatever that is, like... And then that's a much bigger universal problem you're solving too. Yeah, I'm just thinking, and that's like for us too, it's like, okay, well, you know, disconnection, low cohesion is a universal problem across all organizations, but like, where do you start in terms of growing?
Yeah.
But like really also resisting that urge to be like, I don't want to be boxed into one thing because I know we can make a bigger impact.
Yeah, I think that's such, you know, I think that's a really good parallel because for some odd reason, the benefits world has evolved where, you know, you would have disconnection and low cohesion, but it would be for managers, for customer service reps, for adult men, you know, as opposed to for everyone, it's the same problem. And the way you treat them is very similar, whether they're a frontline worker or a manager, you know, is very similar.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And then it's like now, you know, and even like we have these groups for leaders, it's like a train the trainer model. So first there's groups for leaders, there's fundamental skills. And we're like, well, there's more senior leaders who need like maybe the advanced. So now it's sort of like groups for senior leaders. And that becomes a matching thing around, well, who has experience working with senior leaders versus people who don't really have that muscle yet. And then we kind of stratify it that way. So there's fundamental problems that are kind of the same, but then just spliced in different ways, depending on, experience.
And what's so nice too about that model is it seems like there's an opportunity for employees who, you know, they're trying to figure out like what is going to be the thing that makes them like, what is their superpower? And for some people it might be that, and it gives them a chance to have a bigger impact on their team by taking on that, you know, train the trainer model, by taking on that role in their organization. Totally.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like helping leaders learn how to coach, that solves a lot of problems when you like ask the right questions and like track the right things and give feedback, like just do all the fundamentals, and then you can scale it out in a bigger way, which is helpful. Yeah. But yeah, we could talk startup like all day long. But in terms of like your work and sort of the mission and all the awesome work you're doing at Overalls, like, is there anything I didn't ask you about yet that you know think would be relevant or people would want to learn about or hear? Just with your experience?
I don't think so. I think it's just such a fascinating time. I mean, we do another whole hour talking about how technology is going to change everything in the next few years as well. It's such an interesting time to be a leader of an organization or to be someone who's making decisions about human capital, about teams, about development in this environment in particular.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I would love to talk with you about that because you have a human like in the loop really. And so do we. And so of course there's that parallel between us, but I'd love to just talk about that with you sometimes. Cause there's, you know, it seems like you really believe in this. We really believe in this too, that this is, you need kind of a human doing part of this.
I think organizations, you know, at large are going to fall into one of two camps, which is using technology as a way to reduce the headcount and, you know, drive efficiency purely. And I think a lot will be lost for the companies who just do that. And others will take a different approach, which is, how do I make my people superhuman? And how do I use technology to augment them? And that's where I get really excited, is like, let's not, you know, we have an opportunity to make everything so much better using technology. Let's not keep things the same and just make it less expensive by getting rid of people. Let's make these people incredible and do so much more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. And I know I didn't ask you this ahead of time, so I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but what are some of like your favorite things to like either read or listen to or anything that you really, you know,
kind of love? So I've been nerdy out a lot on Stoicism podcasts lately.
Ooh, which one? Or
the
which
Daily
ones?
Stoic has been my go-to for the last year. It's just like so awesome. Easy and like approachable, and 15 minutes on my way home for driving my kids to school. It's just a nice reminder to like focus on values and take sort of a principled approach to life, whether you agree with the values or like set your own set of values. But just the idea of having like a value first lifestyle, something I've really liked lately. In terms of books, I'm trying to think if I've read anything really good lately. I've been working my favorite book, I read this a while ago. My favorite book, though, in the not too distant past was Sapiens.
That was a good one.
Just like the way, I don't know, it was one of the few books I felt like truly changed my whole view of like human evolution and my view of the world as a result. Now, how about you? Are you really looking at anything?
I'm always reading or listening to something. Right now, I just started a book called Cultish. It sounds like darker. It's really about like building strong groups and communities and organizations. And, you know, one of the classes I teach is groups and culture. So it's really about a team psychology type course. How do you think about psychology to build connection, cohesion, to drive outcomes, but on the business front, but the well-being front too. So that's just like, I always never get tired of that. And every semester, people inevitably ask about cults in some capacity, like, how does this intersect? What's similar? What's different? And I never was really like a big cult person, thank God. never got into cults, like you made it this far. But I am curious about them. And this book came recommended by a few people. And now I'm only like two chapters in and I'm really into it. It's not all about just cults. It's about like communication and messaging and what you're solving for. And they draw parallels from different organizations that have done that really well, and then draw parallels to kind of cults in different ways. So I find it fascinating.
Makes sense. I mean, in many ways, they're like embodiments of culture that are unwanted, because there's no underlying product. There's no underlying, you know, customer. It's just a belief system that's indoctrinated into people.
Yeah. And what I love about these things, and, you know, it's like psychology is psychology. It's just in different environments. It's like the way we operate in the world. Like, sure, we might dress differently or might, you know, alter our words, but our kind of foundational needs remain the same. And then, like, you know, when I always say this to people in class, but it's like, once you kind of understand the psychology, it like, you can like see the matrix. It just sort of like, you see the patterns, because they're human patterns all over the place. And so once you can like see the patterns in like the group, you just have a lot of opportunity to like, you know, actually articulate or make the implicit explicit. And now you can activate and execute on real variables to like improve outcomes, whether it's business or whether it's health or, you know, whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah. I can see a new book called Lead Like a Cult Leader.
Oh my God, let's co-write it. I kind of want to write another book. So like that would be really be like the sequel to Cultish.
I'll check that book out for sure. It'll be fun.
Awesome. Well, this was such a fun conversation, John. I just appreciate you like sharing your time and wisdom. And now I know you're into stoicism too. Like psychology and stoicism like overlap in a lot of ways. Yeah, I like have a whole bunch of books I can, you know, send you if you're into it. You're Absolutely. Into this stuff.
Let's swap notes afterwards. Well, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Great. Well, we'll talk soon.